This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was Brian Bannon, the CEO and commissioner of the Chicago Public Library. Brian has been the commissioner of the library since 2012. He's charged with the oversight of a $200 million urban public library system that serves more than 10 million visitors annually through a network of 80, soon to be 82, branch libraries. The Chicago Public Library is the largest and most visited civic institution in Chicago and is among the largest urban public library systems in the world. The library is much more than books that many of us remember as children. It has become an immense learning center. Libraries, Commissioner Bannon said, are dedicated to providing equal access to everyone, resources, so they'll become more productive individuals. From preschool children through seniors, the library is a public servant to all of them. Libraries must adjust, he said, to career shifts, local global perspectives, and lifelong learning. The library is a public space, he said, to connect ideas and people. Highly collaborative work is going on with communities, educational institutions, and more. The three goals that the library has is, number one, improve outcomes for youth, create opportunities for adult lifelong learners, and strengthen neighborhoods through cultural investments. Currently, the library has spent over $250 million in investments in the last 8 years, neighborhood by neighborhood. $182 million has been dedicated to capital projects. The Chicago Public Library also has a foundation that assists the library in raising funds and is one of the reasons why the library received the National Medal for Museums and Library, the highest award that any library can receive. Two new libraries will be coming on board. One will be located in the Fulton Street District of Chicago next to the new McDonald's headquarters, and one will be located inside the Obama Presidential Center. The library has attracted top architects who have engaged in developing new libraries and hopes to continue to expand throughout neighborhoods in Chicago. So the library looks forward to the future. 82 branches, perhaps more to come, as it looks forward to helping Chicagoans become more involved and more successful in the world that we live in.
Our next speaker is also a proud sponsor and advocate of Special Olympics, who we're enormously proud, and he also was there at the 50th anniversary 11 days ago. Ladies and gentlemen, Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Mayor Emanuel.
Thanks, Jay. I think you all are in for, in my view, not just a real treat, but I think something that's very, very important, very special that's happening in our city, which is our neighborhood libraries that are gathering not only national, but I would say also international recognition for what the work Brian and his staff are doing. I have the honor of introducing Brian. We just came from Douglas Library on the west side. We announced a new investment there in a U-Media Center, Early Learning Center, physical upgrade for our library. But he will outline to you a series of unprecedented, not only capital investments, but equally valuable, in my view, if not more valuable, programmatic investments. Now, I may be showing my age, and none of you can comment on that. But I remember when my parents dropped us off to the library, and basically it served one function. One, to get away from your brothers. But on a serious note, was to check out a book. Libraries did it, and they did it really well. But today, libraries are what I would call immense learning centers. That's where you learn, in today, English. When you come from a city with 140 languages spoken in our public school systems. Libraries today are early learning centers. Libraries today are media digital learning centers. Libraries are today where you learn how to do your resume and search for a job. Libraries are where you learn today how to, with a teacher, that is there from 3 to 6. You get tutoring help from kindergarten calculus. Libraries today, if you have a library card in the city of Chicago, you can go online from any computer and get tutoring help, live person, for 18 hours a day in both English and Spanish, and the only library system to do that. Because we all know that if we want to do something and help our kids, we can figure it out. But what libraries today, in the great tradition of what John Dewey talked about, are the great equalizer that make sure that all children have the access to all the resources to have a great future. And not only do they provide all that learning that's going on in a much different way, with technology and the investments we're making that Brian's team is leading, we're doing it in a way that kids can actually not just read about the past, but actually explore the future and become versatile in technology in ways they could not have imagined before. And every effort that we have to in our education system, in our public school systems, and one of the things I'm very proud about, when I became mayor, we didn't really start our universal education until you were 6 years old. Starting this September, we're on our way that education begins for every child when they are 4 years old. And our libraries complement everything we are trying to do in our schools. In addition to that, they're anchors in our community. I remember when we were building a high school in back of the yards in the city of Chicago. Beautiful high school. The community leaders came to me and said, "We need a library." I said, "Well, we don't have the money." But in that conversation, and if you, Brian knows this and every other commissioner knows this, don't ask me to do something and then give me when I have the opportunity to swim. Because I have to. So next morning I called PBC and I said, "Are we putting a library in the high school in back of the yards?" They said, "Yeah." I said, "Well, moving from upstairs down to the first floor." And it's the first library we could, a neighborhood library, quote unquote, called co-locating in a public high school. You'd have thought we were revolutionizing the system. From that began, we have now four neighborhood libraries that are being built in public housing across the city of Chicago by great architects from Skidmore Owings to John Ronan to Perkins and Will, co-locating a neighborhood library in housing in a way that will serve the whole community. And what is most exciting in that effort of co-location and creating community, not just a library over here, a school over there, will be the new neighborhood library in the Obama Presidential Library, the first of its kind anywhere in the United States. And you should all know, when there was, not that I'm competitive, but I am a middle child, that when there was an international review of a German university of all the libraries across the globe, the Chicago Public Libraries was rated number one in the United States and number three in the world. And the person that's leading the effort in having us rethink, reimagine how to do what we used to do traditionally in our libraries is Brian Bannon. And I can't think of a better person at this time to lead this effort and to take us to the next stage than the person who has done a tremendous job by calling Chicago home. Thank God he'll never go back to the West Coast now ever again. But you're into what I think is one of the most important things happening in our city and our neighborhoods across the city of Chicago, Brian Bannon, who's leading that effort.
Thank you, Mayor, for that introduction. And as he's walking out of the room, anytime he introduces me, it seems like he also steals my speech. So thank you for that as well, Mayor. So there's a lot of spoiler alerts. He should have said that in advance. I'm off the talk today. So I'm going to get right into it with some. Well, first I'm going to figure out how to use this little clicker thing. Okay, so I want to start with my own, a couple of quick thank yous. I do want to acknowledge, of course, all the city officials, elected and otherwise, that are in the room, many of whom are our partners. There's many partners in the room today, including the Chicago Public Library Foundation, and a lot of the programs that I'm going to talk about are in part made possible through our collaboration with them. Of course, we've got our board members, Linda Johnson-Rice, and a number of other board members that are here from both our foundation as well as the Chicago Public Library Board. I also just want to take a minute to acknowledge the staff of the Chicago Public Library. If you're with CPL, if you just put your hands in the air for a minute and we could just gently acknowledge you. You know, I love this organization so much, and I think one of the things that makes it such a special place to be is the heart of the people who come to work every day on behalf of the city to provide services around it. So thank you guys for your service to the city and the libraries and all of us. And finally, as the mayor, he's gone, so I don't have to do this, but I'm going to do it. I do really want to acknowledge and thank the mayor for his leadership through libraries. He's one of the very few, certainly the only major U.S. city mayor that is championing this kind of investment in neighborhoods through libraries. And it's his vision, and I think his work with us has allowed us – oh, I guess he lost his briefcase – that has allowed us to really do so much of the investment I'm going to talk about today. It can be traced back to Emmanuel's leadership in the city and his vision for what we can do through libraries. So what I want to talk about today is I'm going to get a little bit of history, sort of social context for where we are today in society. Hopefully some of this stuff isn't a surprise to you. But then I also want to talk about how it relates to the work that we're doing in libraries, and so how some of these shifts in society have impacted how we think about our work in libraries. And then I want to get right into some of the investments, both the physical and capital investments that we're making, but also, as the mayor pointed to, some of the programmatic work that is made possible through these physical investments. So we think about the world that we're living in today, and you can see sort of from this diagram here that we've moved to a very different space. One, thinking about even my own parents' generation, that we're moving from a time where many of us would have maybe one or two jobs in our entire career, or we're working towards an environment where kids graduating from college today are going to have 10 to 15 very distinct different jobs. This isn't sort of moving up in the same organization. This is likely career shifts that will happen over time. We're also seeing a world that we're moving from global competition, local competition to global, and the world that we have to compete in as a society. The way that we even look at education today, it used to be sort of institutional-centered. We had formal degrees that were attained, and we're moving to a completely different paradigm in terms of how we think about how we educate ourselves and our communities, that we're much more learner-centered today, we're much more self-directed. This idea of lifelong learning is at the center of how we think about education, and this is from the very young all the way through school. As we're graduating kids from high school into college, we have to be prepared to continue to learn, continue to grow in order to fill all these various different sort of career opportunities that come our way. And so in a long way of saying, we're in a very different state as a society. And so as we think about the role of libraries, it's important for us to be clear about the distinct world that we're living in today and how we perform or leverage the unique mission of public libraries. It really hasn't changed, but do it in a way that's relevant to society and today. And so when we think about the role of public libraries, it really hasn't changed much from back when Benjamin Franklin, almost 250 years ago, conceived of the public space that allows people to connect to the leading ideas and knowledge of the day in a very physical way. His early writings talked about a public place where people with very different interests and ideas could come together around those shared interests in order to make a more competitive, hopefully smarter and democratic society. And so those ideas are still really present in the public library today, but the way that we need to do that looks very different than it did during that time. As we look at the shifts that we are experiencing in libraries as it relates to the larger society, we're looking at a place where we used to be primarily focused on one-directional distribution of content to a world of information that we're inundated with. So it's multi-directional content. It's content that is not just a book that we're passing out. It's actually creating real content within our libraries. We're also talking about a way that we engage with information in completely different ways. We used to be, again, one directional in terms of how we engage with our audiences. We're now much more multifunctional in how we engage with the larger population of library users. used to be that libraries acted really independently in their neighborhoods and communities, that we saw ourselves as a standalone sort of ivory tower institution, and that's changed radically in recent years, that we're now seeing ourselves as being highly collaborative, and in order for us to be successful, we need to be working much more deeply with our community partners, so whether it's museums and cultural institutions and educational institutions, or whether it's some of the ones that I'm going to talk about today in the built space. And also the way that we think about learning. You know, libraries used to sort of assume an outcome. We had a lot of great programs that we were offering, but we really couldn't trace a lot of that work to very specific community level outcomes mm-hmm. on the ground. So we weren't really looking at how public libraries are supporting the actual education system of our cities. We weren't looking at public libraries in the way we actually support the workforce development or job space within our city. We weren't looking specifically at how libraries and the data behind it support the community neighborhood strengthening. And increasingly, we're looking at that in a much more intentional way and helping that drive our strategy, but also our impact work across the board. It's a long way of saying, as we look at our Chicago Public Library today, we launched a strategy back in 2015 that really codified this unique moment in our history, looking at what is the role that we want to play in our neighborhoods, how is that role tied to our core mission, so that we don't depart from our mission, but how is it that we as a library system can be a strategic partner with the city, with the mayor, and so many of you in the room in helping make our city stronger, more democratic, smarter, and hopefully more competitive here regionally, but also globally. And that really has driven our thinking, our strategy for how we are making public library services available today. So I'm going to pause for a moment, and if you forget it, you can see it over here on the wall. We're officially announcing today that a big part of this sort of talk is about this initiative called Branching Out, Building Libraries and Building Communities. And really what this represents is $250 million of new investments in the Chicago Public Libraries in the mayor's first and second term. So if you look at the eight-year period, in addition to the sort of all the regular stuff that we've been doing in our libraries, we've invested $250 million. A big part of this is capital. A big part of this is through our partnership with the Chicago Public Library Foundation. And there's also another piece of this that is about actually just hiring people that are coming into the organization and providing a whole new set of complement of services. And it's a historic investment in our institution. And what makes it even more historic is the kind of investment we're making. We didn't pass some big bond where we're just sort of, you know, across the board issuing sort of new libraries and capital through to one source of funds. But we're actually going neighborhood by neighborhood and leveraging sort of unique pieces of capital dollars that are available, partnerships that are available, philanthropic dollars that are available. And by doing that neighborhood by neighborhood, project by project, not only have we built a much more robust system, but we actually have much deeper collaborations, much greater buy-in in the larger system. So it's a little harder than passing a big bond, I think, as many other cities have done. But it allows us to actually, I think, walk our walk in a much truer way and actually have much bigger impact as we're doing it. So I'm going to share a video. Oh, here we go.
From its new branches, a robust online presence, and programs that cater to visitors of all ages, Chicago Public Library has reimagined traditional services and is now widely considered the number one library system in the country. Each of our 80 library branches are critical anchors, serving as social, economic, and learning hubs in communities across the city. Through city investment and innovative partnerships, the library has seen $182 million of new capital projects. Capital investments have included new, award-winning libraries in the Albany Park and Chinatown neighborhoods. Building improvements and branch expansions will enrich communities throughout Chicago. Under Mayor Emanuel's leadership, a truly unique partnership was born between CPL and other city departments. In 2013, CPL announced the co-location of a public library branch on the campus of the new Back of the Yards High School. Last year, CPL entered into a partnership with the Chicago Housing Authority, which will include co-located housing and library developments designed by renowned architects in Irving Park, West Ridge, and the Near West Side. As the city works to continually improve library buildings, Mayor Emanuel has also invested $24 million in people and programs. Children and families learn and explore in innovative early learning play spaces at the redesigned Thomas Hughes Children's Library and 14 additional neighborhood branch locations. Citywide programming for teens and adults encourages career exploration and helps build tech skills. The city and CPL have found an incredible private partner in the Chicago Public Library Foundation. For 30 years, private philanthropy has helped leverage city funding to make critical investments in expanded programming that provides lifelong learning and enrichment to Chicagoans. These combined investments of $206 million have resulted in prestigious recognitions, including receiving the National Medal from the Institute of Museum and Library Services, which is the highest honor bestowed upon libraries. Chicago Public Library is a beacon of innovation and opportunity in every one of Chicago's neighborhoods and serves over 1 million Chicagoans. By 2019, CPL will have updated, expanded, or renovated 20 existing library branches and will have invested in new technology programs and services. This is just the beginning. These libraries are vital to our communities. And Mayor Emanuel, the City of Chicago, and the Chicago Public Library Foundation will keep supporting Chicago Public Library to provide more service to all Chicagoans.
Very nice. Thank you, Chicago. I should thank our Library Foundation for creating that video. You know, you probably already noticed if you're good at math that the numbers are out of date. We're actually adding more and more. So that it talked about a 200 plus million. We're at now 250 million. And this is only just a couple of months old. So what I want to talk about next is so the video covers a lot of these pieces. I want to walk through some of the individual collaborations that are allowing us to do really innovative built libraries, but also then moving into some of the programmatic work that we're doing. If you look at the investments that we've made around the city, these investments aren't just in one neighborhood. These are investments across the city, in the north, the central, the south side of the city. And by 2009, we will see 11 brand new branch libraries and renovate 17 by the end of 2019. And you know what this means is if you look at our current portfolio, fortunately during the daily years, Senator Commissioner Mary Dempsey, we actually hit a lot of the libraries in our portfolio. This gets us to almost all the remaining libraries in the city. And if you look, again, at the context of Chicago compared to other major U.S. cities, and actually New York is a great example, they had a very public sort of negative campaign, actually, about the roughly $1 billion in deferred maintenance in their infrastructure of neighborhood libraries. And again, when you look at a city like New York, it was comparable in terms of the size of its library system. Where they're starting out and where we're starting out are in very different places. And a big part of why we're able to do so much of what we're doing today is because of a long-sustained history, a long sustained commitment to public libraries in Chicago. And so when we look at this investment across the city, it's huge, and we're continuing with a long tradition of investment in Chicago's neighborhoods through libraries. Now, one of the collaborations that you saw in the video, but also the mayor mentioned, really sort of kicked off this concept, and this is a number of years ago. We had closed the Back of the Yards neighborhood library due to some issues related to water leakage. It was an old lease site. It wasn't habitable anymore, and so we had to close down the library. We were looking for a new one. And as the mayor mentioned, it was a really innovative idea. I mean, essentially, we were building a $100 million high school campus literally across the street from where that library had been. And in the plans of the campus were actually plans for an 8,000 square foot library and a library that would serve the school. Now, my understanding is that actually that library was intended conceptually to possibly be a public library, but it had not yet been planned as part of the concept. And so the mayor stepped up and said, hey, look, we're going to staff this as a public library. We're going to design as a public library. And actually, Erin Lavin, who was the head of the PPC, who's sitting right here at the moment, said, great. And she was very quick to help us make that change. And so this was the beginning of sort of this new idea about how we might look at leveraging neighborhood assets such as schools and others to co-locate library facilities where it made sense. And so in this this particular case, we have a neighborhood library that has its own separate entrance for the community. It's connected to the high school. Obviously, we have a built-in audience of high school kids, but also we have story time and family time. We have a digital media center for teenagers and a whole lot more. Actually, Maggie Clemens, who used to be the branch manager there, who's also here, she's head of one of our districts now, really was the first experiment. And there was a lot that we learned from that, from, you know, carpet color to furniture. But there is, and as you'll see along the way, we continue to learn and we continue to evolve. But don't put pink, light pink carpet in a heavily trafficked library. I'll tell you that did not work out well. But the rest of it did. And it really set us off on a new idea. And it also was an interesting sort of insight for us about, you know, it had been a long time since we did a library that wasn't a prototype. And since this was already, it was a prototype school, but it wasn't a prototyped library. So we had to think new about the space. We had to think about how we might engage the community in it. And it opened us up to this idea that perhaps we might look at every time we go into a neighborhood, perhaps we design and create a library that's uniquely catered to that neighborhood and geography. Now, I want to talk about what we're doing, and I'm going to get into design excellence in a minute. This led to some other discussions around co-location, and the one that the mayor already announced, we talked about in the video, is this collaboration with the Chicago Housing Authority. We're actually working on four different projects, and it's somewhere between 35 and 50 units of housing. But in each of these cases, we've got these beautiful anchoring neighborhood libraries. And you know, as we started this collaboration, you know, sometimes, you know, the mayor comes up with these great ideas and they, you know, they really work. And I think this is an example of it. And really where this concept came from, if you look at the mission of a public library, I talked about it earlier today about, you know, connecting people to information and ideas to make a stronger, more democratic community and society. If you actually look at the mission of the Chicago Housing Authority or housing in general, it isn't actually, and I was surprised when I was reading their mission statement, it isn't actually just to provide housing. And in fact, housing is considered to be a piece of neighborhood stabilization. It's about rising old tides. It's about bringing a community together. It's about supporting learning and economic development. It's so much bigger than just the concept of housing. And so as we began to overlay the missions of our two institutions, what we realized is this co-location opportunity was really good for both of us. So it wasn't just about financial savings. Actually, from a programmatic standpoint, we couldn't quite believe how well we really meshed together. And that led us off from the very beginning. So that the high school, we sort of came in at the very end. In this case, we started at the very beginning and looked at how do our two missions overlap with each other? How can we leverage and lean into the things that are best about housing and the best about libraries to create a benefit that will support the entire community? And that's really where this idea started and where we're going with it. So we have a library in that's going in the Roosevelt neighborhood, a brand new library that's also going to Independence Park. One of the things that is so heartening about the story for Independence Park is that this was a community that had a really wonderful, bustling branch library, also a leased facility. There was a horrible fire that basically took down the entire block. The library was part of that block, and while it wasn't completely burned, it was horrible water damage. Basically, everything had to be destroyed. And so we lost our library. And the community was really involved in lobbying for bringing a library service back. But again, in a heavily densely populated part of the city, we didn't have access to capital dollars. And so when this concept came along of being able to bring in both housing and library, the community was just thrilled at this, you know, at this opportunity. And so, again, we're going to build a beautiful new library with housing above it in the Independence Park neighborhood and actually bring back a library that had been lost to fire. Northtown is a library, also a replacement, another co-located facility, and it's going to be a brand new, and I'm going to get into the architects in a minute. And then Altguild on the far south side. This is also going to be a standalone physical library that will be embedded into the Altguild Community Gardens public housing. So in each of these cases, again, we're building a public benefit in concert with a public agency in housing to create something that's better than the sum of its parts. Now, I want to talk about another kind of collaboration. Again, now Erin in her new hat is sitting in the audience again, part of Sterling Bay. But we've got, Mayor already mentioned that we are started a collaboration with the Obama Presidential Center. But I want to talk about two new collaborations with private development that we're really excited about. One actually is in the West Loop, and this will be the 81st branch of the Chicago Public Library. And what's exciting about that is so much of the development we've done has been about replacing existing buildings or improving on existing buildings. And so we're actually expanding our portfolio by one with this new library that we're doing in the the West Loop. It's directly across the street from the brand new McDonald's headquarters. And, you know, as Sterling Bay and others have been doing a lot of development, we've been, you know, the density of the West Loop has been growing, population, people are growing into that neighborhood. Again, what we started hearing from the community is like, hey, wait, why don't we have a public library over here? You know, if you visited that neighborhood 10, 15, 20 years ago, there wouldn't have been a need for it. But now people are living there. It's a vibrant community. And so our partnership with private development has enabled us to essentially get donated a brand new full-service library. It's actually part of the old Oprah Studios headquarters. It's a standalone 16,000-square-foot building. Sterling Bay is donating this to the city and building it out to our specifications. There'll be a beautiful digital media lab, so many of the things that we're doing in neighborhood libraries. But we were able to do this through a very specific kind of collaboration, and it was made possible by a lot of people coming to the table and doing this through a private collaboration, again, as opposed to leveraging city dollars or doing it through sort of other means that we had done before. So it took a lot of time to figure it out, but here we are getting ready by the end of this year to open it. The other project, yeah. The other project that I want to mention, you know, the mayor already touched on this, but what I think is so exciting about this collaboration with the Obama Presidential Center is, actually I see Andrea Sines, who was most recently at the library, now at the Chicago Community Trust as the Chief Operating Officer, but, you know, Andrea and I started talking with the Obama Foundation staff about a year and a half ago, and as they were coming to town, they were looking at sort of this idea of how can the center come to the city and send a different kind of message. Presidential centers typically are very inwardly focused. They typically have a strong archival component. Oftentimes, they're sort of they're big sort of vanity projects of past presidents, and I think that President Obama wanted it to be very different than that. He wanted to send a very different message. He wanted it to be very public. He wanted the community that are living immediately around it to feel that presence of that institution was there for them. And so they started talking with us about, like, how can we learn from what a public library is doing and incorporate some of those values, some of those ideals within the center? And, you know, we had a series of discussions. We showed them our programming. We went out to neighborhoods. And at one point, a member of the foundation team said, you know, we keep talking with you guys about how we can replicate what the public library is already doing. Why don't we just invite you in as a public library and do what you do well? And we sort of looked at each other and like, oh, well, maybe we should do that. And so we did a feasibility study. We looked, and actually this is a community that did need a new neighborhood library. It actually will be our 82nd branch library. And what's been really exciting about this collaboration is that as we've looked at the evolution of what public libraries are and can be, it allowed us to have these early conversations with the center. It allowed us to come to this idea. And when we open this branch library, what's going to be really exciting about it is it'll be blended into the center. So it'll have its own roughly 5,000 square foot sort of footprint of library services, but it'll be integrated in the larger center. And so there are big performance halls and recording studios and a lot of the fancy stuff that they're going to be doing in this, I don't know, $700 million. I have no idea how much the whole thing is going to cost, but like way more than we would ever spend on a library. We'll have access to that, and the public will have access to that through the Chicago Public Library. And so to me, what I think is so exciting about this new development is that they're coming, that the Obamas came to town and they saw something that was already working in our city, and rather trying to replicate it or recreate it, they're working through it. And I think that is a new way that we're thinking about our public libraries. And when I talk about some of the collaborations that we have with museums in town and some of the others, that's really how these collaborations are working, is people are using us as an artery to reach neighborhoods and using the values and the mission of a library to do it. And I think this is just such a great example of how we're doing this through libraries today. So, but I also want to touch on some of the other capital that we're doing. These are done, again, very piecemeal. We actually announced this morning, as the mayor mentioned, a brand new investment in the Douglas neighborhood, but we're making investments in Austin. We have a new a major library project for the Chicago Bee. We're opening later this year the library in the Chatham neighborhood, the Whitney Young branch, and that's probably like six or seven different sources of funds and different people that we're working with to fund it. The Merlo Library in Lakeview, Carter G. Woodson Regional Library just reopened this year. Beautiful regional library with a completely new skin and completely reimagined library space. So all this is to say is that we're making huge investments in these neighborhoods, and we're using all the various different tools at our disposal to do it. And across the city, everyone is benefiting from this. So, on to some of the design work that we're doing. Now, you know, the mayor didn't touch on this, so I'm going to do this for him, is the you know, he really has pushed us to think in a new way about how we design civic space. And again, it started with this Back of the Yards library, but it moved very quickly into cascading across how we look at library design, you know, in our city. So, you know, it used to be that Chicago's libraries, much like fire stations and police stations, is that we would design something one time and then we'd replicate it across the city. And the mindset at that point was that if you design it once, you'll save cost in terms of architecture fees, you'll save sort of time, et cetera. And so in a lot of ways, the prototype model worked really well. We would design something once, we would replicate it, and we would, you know, do it in multiple neighborhoods. The challenge is that oftentimes the prototype didn't fit quite the way it was supposed to fit. We had to make, you know, modifications and changes to it, and it also didn't necessarily fit the identity, the vibrancy of the neighborhood, and it certainly didn't invite the neighborhood to be a big part of conceiving of that building or library. This is actually a prototype that we built not long after I started as commissioner, about 6 years ago, in the Albany Park neighborhood. And one of the things we decided to do is, since we'd already planned on a prototype, we thought, you know, why don't we try to take a fresh look at the design and see if there's a way that we might be able to design something new with something that's sort of already set. And actually, again, Aaron helped us do this. We brought the community together, and we started asking really basic questions. What do people want out of their neighborhood library? What do people need out of their neighborhood library? And actually, over a very short period of time, we were able to make some pretty dramatic changes to this prototype. But it allowed us to think in a whole new way about how we might engage community in the design process. Then came Chinatown. Chinatown Library, I'm gonna stop talking about Aaron, but you know, here she is. Chinatown Library came our way, and I mean, I sat down with Aaron, and we're like, well, it's a triangular lot. Our prototype fits on a square lot. And so we had these discussions like, well, how do we modify the prototype for that? So it became an opportunity for us to do a design-build competition. And so what started sort of at the Albany Park Library, we began to think, well, what if we asked the architecture community in Chicago to, you know, to come up with really wild ideas about how they could put a library on a triangular lot? And what if we also then brought the contractor to the table at the same time, so we might be able to save costs? And so what we found, in fact, is we could do just that. We could bring in world-class architects to be interested in doing small-scale civic architecture in neighborhoods. We could bring in contractors early so we could manage costs. And we were able to build the Chinatown Library, which is now, I think, won more civic awards than any other public building in the city. And this is just a 16,000 square foot library in the Chinatown neighborhood. We were able to get an incredible bank of architects that bid and built this beautiful new library. And by the way, the community was heavily engaged in this process, the identity of the neighborhood. We actually had a feng shui expert that worked on it. So, you know, it was a very different feel when you go into this space. It connects old and new Chinatown. It fits nicely on that triangular lot because it's an oval. And again, this allowed us sort of this next evolution of design excellence. The Thomas Hughes Children's Library that we opened last summer, again, another evolution of that. We worked with Gensler to help us design that project. And then moving back to the projects that you've already seen, this early work of thinking about the importance of strong design and civic architecture and bringing in leading architects to help us think about designing these civic spaces, that work that we did early on has led to these beautiful new projects that we're doing now around the city. These are also design competitions that we've led, and we have really incredible architects that are a part of these projects and so many others. STL, Gensler, Kuhn Associates, SOM, Jackson and Harlan, Tom and William Telson, BLK, I mean, so many Ronan architects, the folks who do the Riverwalk are working on our library. So this kind of heart and soul that these architects are bringing to our neighborhoods, we're going to see benefits to come for generations. So in my final moments, I want to power through just a few cool things that we're doing. I mean, it's not just about building beautiful buildings. It's about actually the work that we do in our neighborhoods. A number of years ago, we reconceived our summer programming for kids. It used to be roughly 50,000 kids participated in our summer programs. Now we have a summer program that's roughly over 100,000 kids in combination with the parks and others. But what's exciting about our summer programming is that it's actually driving real change in our communities, that kids who are participating in our summer learning challenge are seeing
15% gains in reading and 20% gains in math and science as a result of this redesign. We have a collaboration with the University of Chicago that's allowing us to track kids. So getting back to this trend or shift in public libraries, providing really fun programs is obviously important, but actually providing programs that's driving real educational outcomes is even more important. And so not only are we reaching more kids, we're reaching them in a much more intentional way that's driving real impact and educational gains. Similarly with our homework help program, all these programs, by the way, are supported by our library foundation. Our homework help program, which is a fantastic program that supports kids and families across the city for homework help. We have an online component as it's in English and Spanish in any subject. We also have a teacher in the library, a homework help assistant in our neighborhood libraries. And again, this program, what we found through our collaboration with Chapin Hall, is not only helping kids really make gains in the classroom, it's actually helping the kids who need it most. When you look at the income gaps, when you look at English as a second language, when you look at the kids who are actually using the program, we're reaching the kids who need it the most. Another program that has been started as a concept back in 2009, famously Chance the Rapper did his first album, actually mixed his first album at the UMedia Center at the Harold Washington Library. This concept started as an idea that we would create a digital media space for teenagers, recording studios and, you know, fancy equipment and technology, but basically just a fun place for teens to hang out with the idea that they'd be able to stumble upon opportunities that they might connect them to post-secondary outcomes. And what we're finding is this program is doing just that. Again, we have some famous celebrities that have come out of this, but we have some less famous celebrities that are actually going on to college and actually following their dreams in the same way. And it's this kind of work that we think is so critical to the role of libraries. And by the way, this UMedia Center that we did at the Harold Washington Library back in 2009, by the end of 2019, we'll have 22 of them around the city of Chicago. Also within the adult space, we have looked at the role that we play in providing digital access. And, you know, it might surprise some of you, but that 1 in 3 Chicagoans doesn't have access to a computer from home or internet. So still in today where we all have these different devices and multiple, you know, access points online, that isn't the case for everyone in our city. And so the library is the largest provider of free public technology in the city. And the vast majority of people who are using Chicago Public Library for that access are looking to communicate. They're looking to, you know, do email, et cetera. But most of them are actually looking for jobs, creating their first resume, looking to get online, et cetera. And so a number of years ago, we started to rethink this program, not as a true workforce development program, but really as an on-ramp to the workforce ecosystem. And just within the last couple of years, we started actually tracking people who were getting jobs as a result or self-reporting. And so we're thrilled that a program like this one that has one-on-one computer support where people can learn how to use a computer, create their first resume, and then actually get online and apply for a job. That's happening through our libraries, and people are getting jobs as a result. Let's see. I'm going to skip over that one and move into questions. I'm not going to skip over that one. I think that's actually really cool because I do want to take a minute to actually acknowledge Comcast. One of the things that we've done I have a 3-minute. Okay, good. So I can talk about this. You know, a few years ago, we did an experiment. It was supposed to be a 6-month pilot where we put we created basically a maker lab or maker studio, 3D printers and CNC milling machines and a lot of stuff as part of the maker ecosystem. And we tried to close it 3 months later. Later, and, you know, we couldn't. And because there was such a demand in the city, we were so surprised by it, for people who just wanted to tinker and play with this advanced technology. And so rather than closing it, we've continued to invest in it. We just announced Comcast just a few months ago, the Internet Essentials program, that we're actually going to be in a number of neighborhood libraries, 3 neighborhood libraries, taking this concept of manufacturing and making and bringing it to our neighborhoods in the form of studios. So things for teenagers as well as adults. Again, looking at the advanced technologies that are out there, so not just sort of basic computing, things like green screens and virtual reality and all the various different things that will support sort of the creative and workforce ecosystem of the city. We're making those things available through our libraries. And it started with a very simple pilot at the Harold Washington Library, and it's now extending through our neighborhood. So all of these things cumulatively
We're able to do this because of an investment that we've made in our infrastructure, and a lot of this we've been able to do because of the deep collaborations that much of this investment has required. And as you look at Chicago in comparison to our other cities, certainly there's interesting stuff happening in libraries across the country and really around the world, but when you look at sort of what's the heart of what's working well in Chicago, and when you look at the heart of what's working well in other cities, it often goes back to collaboration, it goes back to a fierce focus on neighborhoods and community, and it goes back to investment. And I think that we should all feel really proud of the kind of investment that we're making in Chicago, whether it's through the city or whether it's through our private philanthropic community. All these investments are paying off and making our city stronger, more vibrant, and hopefully better connected, democratic, and safer, and competitive. So with that, thank you, and I'm done.
Is this vodka?
It is. However, you're on the clock, don't forget. Okay.
It's water.
It is water.
I am on the clock.
Michelle, could I? Folks, on your tables, you may have found some 3x5 blue cards. If any of you have any questions that you would like to ask of Brian, write them down. Our staff will collect them. And Sarah, do you happen to have our transparent fishbowl? Some of you may not have deposited your calling card, your business card, in this fishbowl, but we have a wonderful drawing coming up. So if you haven't, Sarah will go around and just pull out your card, drop it in while we handle some questions that Brian has agreed to tackle with. Very first question from Michelle Boone down here. Are the new libraries subject to the percent on art ordinance? If so, what are the public art projects planned?
So the percent of public art, yes, they are. And for those of you who aren't familiar with that program, public buildings of a certain size, budget size, and construction size, a percentage of that needs to be held aside for public art. So we're working, it's roughly $25,000, I think, per library. So yes, we are working on public art. Actually, Chinatown was a great example where we actually engaged an artist in the neighborhood to do a mural. So we're actively working on that now.
Okay, we really have some good questions here. This is from Trevor Peterson, who's with the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center, City Club member, by the way. Chicago Public Libraries has many great programs for children. In light of the Chicago Tribune's recent Betrayed report on problems of child abuse at CPS, what measures are the Chicago Public Libraries taking to ensure the safety of children in its care?
That's a great question. And I think that it's important to, there's a really important distinction between a public library, actually public parks, and public schools, is that when a child is at a public school, the school is taking legal responsibility for that child. That is not the case of a public library. So part of the reason I say that is because we always want to be careful about parents just sending their kids to a public library or a public park without supervision. That said, we do a lot of work in its CPL to train our librarians and those who are working with children to both be mindful of the kinds of things, that abuse that a child could be experiencing in their life at home or, you know, within their settings, so that we can help intervene. And we have a lot of programs in place that support the training for staff, but also escalating those things to support kids and keeping them safe.
Okay, thank you. This is from Betty Georgie, who's with the Wilmette Public Library. Question, Brian, how can public libraries assist in furthering discussion of issues that affect their communities? Where is the quote-unquote talent, or who are the people who could assist communities in having these discussions in a civil and constructive manner?
So that's actually a great question, and one that we're thinking a lot about as part of our next strategic plan. I'm looking at Mary Ellen Messner, who is our new first deputy commissioner, who's going to be leading that process for us, is that libraries are a really trusted space. It happens to be that the full spectrum of Chicagoans use our libraries, so we reflect the diversity, the rich diversity of our city, and age, background, race, you name it. And so we actually think libraries are really important, and there's an opportunity for libraries to help facilitate some of those discussions. We've had collaborations with the Chicago Community Trust as part of On the table, the largest convener of these of those conversations, and many other examples from collaborations with the Steppenwolf Theater Company, where we've produced full-length plays and talkbacks. But we're always looking for opportunities to work with cultural partners and others to help facilitate meaningful dialogue that makes our neighborhood stronger through the library.
Terrific. Well, there's no shortage of questions, I'll tell you this. This is an easy one. This is from Matt DeLort. Matt, where are you? Okay. He's a justice with the Illinois Appellate Court. Very easy question. When is the new Independence Branch Library opening?
I believe it will open in December 1st. Andrea? Yeah. Late November, early December. Actually, Independence, Roosevelt, Northtown, and Whitney Young, and West Loop will all. So we have five libraries that are opening, if you can believe this, between Thanksgiving and Christmas this year.
By the way, we should probably recognize Erin and have her stand up, because you know, there were so many references that the commissioner made to. Erin, thank you. You may be a speaker here before we know it. This is from, I'm going to butcher your name, I apologize, Maris Wendens. How does Chicago spending on libraries compare to other large cities per capita?
You know, I'm less, you know, per capita is a tricky number, and I'll be honest, I don't know the specifics of a per capita as it relates to Chicago and other cities. But as I mentioned, the capital investments that we're making here are unprecedented when you look at our peers. The best examples I can think of, some smaller cities, so San Francisco and Seattle I know well because I did work in libraries in those cities. They have made big capital investments, but they've done it by passing bond measures. So in Chicago, the kind of investments, not only that the investments we're making today, which are huge. The kinds of investments we have made over time are significant. And when we look at our peers, you know, we're open 6 days a week at all locations. We have, you know, the kinds of services we're offering. We really are, you know, we are really, what are you mouthing to me? Oh, okay. Andrea Telly, I didn't know if she was saying, am I lying? No, just kidding. is that we're making big investments in Chicago as compared to other cities by every measure.
Yeah, and Andrea and Erin both thought they were being invited to a free lunch. You didn't know you were going to be put on. Okay. You just mentioned 6 days a week. This is from Mark Lovelace, who's the Cook County Committee on Social Innovation Director. Will any of these changes include an increase in library hours? And what's happening with Bessie Coleman, other than the Bessie Coleman Drive out by O'Hare?
So we don't have plans currently to increase library hours, but we are dramatically increasing services that we offer through our neighborhood library. So 6 days a week is a lot. We've talked about adding hours. Certainly we've had these discussions. I feel like I'm at a city council meeting all of a sudden. Alderman, I appreciate your interest in library hours. So, I mean, obviously library hours would be great, but for us, what's more important is that we're providing really high-quality services, and that's really where we've seen expansions. And I think just as a side note, as we've added all these new libraries to our portfolio, we've added more staff, too. And so as we've added new investments in teens, we've hired, you know, when I started as commissioner almost 7 years ago, we had zero staff committed to teens. We have close to 50 now. So we're making big investments in the people and programs, but not necessarily, we don't have any plans right now to open additional hours.
Great. Okay, this is from Donald Hubel, who is a CSI certified safety inspector. I'm a member of the public library for decades. Why not have library free delivery through the post office for handicapped people, senior citizens, where it's hard for them to travel?
That's a great. We actually, through the State Library of Illinois, we actually do have a program where you can have a books by mail program if you're visually impaired. It would be interesting. We could look at the possibility of logistics for delivering to home, but right now we don't have the capacity to deliver to all locations. But something to consider. But definitely, there is a program if you're visually impaired to have books delivered to you, or if you're homebound to your home.
Okay, we've got a few last questions here. This is from Laura Hayes. You probably know her. She's the vice president of the CPLF Associate Board. In London,
I saw a public library that leased space to a coffee shop. Spaces were separate but connected. Have we thought of doing this? Could this be a source of sustainable revenue in leasing and licensing fees?
No, you can't eat or drink in the library. No, I'm kidding. you're not allowed to talk, you're not allowed to eat, you're not allowed to drink in the library. No, actually, I think that's a great idea. And definitely cafes and libraries have been popular, they've ebbed and flowed. Actually, CPL used to at one point have a cafe. It unfortunately failed. It went out of business. But we'd be open to talking about how we could do that in neighborhood libraries or Harold Washington Library.
Okay, this is from Bridget Coughlin, the CEO of the Shedd Aquarium. Given the vast open retail space across the city because of online commerce, any thoughts to using current buildings rather than building new? And she has an additional question. What are the international trends in libraries? We're number one in the U.S. What about the world?
Well, right now we're ranked 3 in the world, but Mayor wants me to change that. I would actually argue that these co-location projects are doing exactly what this comment is suggesting, is how we can leverage existing city assets, whether new city assets that are being built or existing ones. And so we actually do have a library and a parks facility. We have looked at that. An important part, actually, the collaboration with the OPC is an example of that. And there actually are, I think someone asked about Bessie Coleman. There's conversations we're even having in that neighborhood about possible co-locations. So we're really interested in that as a model, and whether it's existing buildings or as we're looking at strategic development in neighborhoods, we think that's an important part of our strategy moving forward.
Okay, thank you. This is from a member of the CPL Foundation, Bob Wislow. Bob, thank you. Buttering you up. After your terrific presentation, I am sure the entire audience would like to know how they can help our library continue to grow. Robert, thank you.
If you'd like to write a check to the Chicago Public Library Foundation, see Bob Wislow following the lunch. No, I mean, actually, our partnership with the foundation is incredible. And again, I mentioned it during my remarks, but so many of the programs that we offer are made possible through private contribution. And so I really do see Bob after, if you're interested in getting involved, or Tom or Darcy or some of the other folks who are here from the foundation.
Okay. Final question. This is from John Bracken with the Digital Public Library of America.
Yeah.
We've been giving you all these easy questions to answer.
I'm his board president, so
you are
going to ask the nice one.
This is what he asked. What has been the most difficult thing you have had to stop doing?
What's the most difficult thing I've had to stop? I keep trying to stop doing. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to make that joke about. Actually, we have a lot of buildings that we keep planning. But you know, I think probably the hardest thing to stop doing. It has to do, you know, there's a lot of programs that we've offered for years that we seem to love in our hearts but aren't necessarily driving the kind of impact that we've always said. And like when we went from doing a summer reading program to a summer learning program, there was a lot of loss that went with that. I mean, even though we're focusing on reading for sure in our new complement, we had to completely throw out the approach that we'd done in the past. And there's lots of examples of how we've had to do that along the way. But that's a great question, John. Thanks. And I want to just end, because I know that we're at time. Oh, I want to thank the City Club for welcoming us and the Chicago Library here, and all of you for coming out today to hear about libraries. Mm-hmm. And with that, I think we are done. Yes?
No.